Welcome everyone to the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Boone. We are wrapping up our season preview series today. We went over quarterbacks with Pat Fitzmaurice, running backs with Jared Smola, and then earlier this week we talked receivers with Sean Kerner, and it was Sean's first time on the show, and man, people love that episode. We got a ton of kind words, so thank you for that. I think you are going to be just as excited, if not more so, about today's guest, Chris Raybon. He is another analyst from the Action Network. He's also making his first appearance on the show. He's on Twitter at Chris Raybon. He co-hosts the Fantasy Flex podcast with Sean, and I think I'm going to be on there in the next couple of weeks. We just got to figure out which day, but Chris is an outstanding analyst, one of the best in the industry. I've been trying to get him on the show for a while now, and this time around, it just worked out perfectly because he was the most accurate tight end ranker last season, so he's going to help us figure out what the heck to do with tight ends in drafts this year, and another one that has been coming for a long time. Chris, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Justin. Thanks for having me. Hope everyone bears with me. My mic wire just fried, so I'm using the lowly MacBook mic for this episode. But we're still gonna do some things. So
I was saying before the show to you when that happened that I had a similar thing happen a month or so ago, and I actually had to make a decision where my computer, my two USB ports, one of them died. So I had to make a decision that day of, am I going to have good video or good audio? It was just one or the other. And I think I went with the better audio. I was more worried about that. So the video looked like I was underwater, but I think your mic sounds okay right now. So I'm not too worried about that at all.
I'm glad, man. I mean, it's about time these MacBooks started having, you know, quality microphones that don't sound like you're on Sound Recorder in Windows 2001 or something like that. So hopefully we're good. Hopefully everybody hears me.
Yeah, you're talking to somebody that had a MacBook screen crack a little while ago, so we don't want to get into the MacBook situation right now. I'm in the process of getting that one fixed. Let's jump right in, though, to the position. And the first question is always a little tricky in these episodes because I'm going to ask you not to mention specific players if you can avoid it. Just looking at, in general, how you approach the tight end position without giving out the names of the guys you're targeting or avoiding, because we're going to talk about that as the show goes along here. So in general, what's your tight end strategy in 2021 fantasy drafts? How are you approaching the position?
I am trying to get a stud tight end if I can. Now, there's really only three true ones. And when you look at the historical win rates of taking a tight end in the first round, it's a little risky. So we all know the tight end going in the first round. I don't have to say names, but I think that it's risky because, all things being equal, you rather have the overall running back one or overall wide receiver one than the overall tight end ones. And what happens is, if you're taking a tight end in that first round, you may be giving up the chance to get one of those slam dunk running backs that could finish first overall if things break right, or a wide receiver. So that, even though I like the stud tight ends, I'm usually targeting the ones that can be had in rounds 2 and 3. I think that's the sweet spot. And then if not, there's another tier of 3 after that, I believe. I'm usually trying to draft the last player that falls in that tier if I can, because after that top 6, and it's maybe even more like a top 5, we'll get to that a little later in the show, but after that second tier of tight ends, it's kind of a crapshoot. Like, it's a real toss-up. And even though everyone's going to kind of like different guys. There's some guys you can like the upside, the talent, you know, a lot of different things, opportunity for some of them. There's all these different things, but are these guys going to be consistent week in, week out guys? Probably not. And so that's why I'm really targeting the higher end of the tight end, because it's just, I want a consistent guy, you know, that I'm not going to have to worry about, should I start him this week? You know, tight end matchups are really tough to predict, even though I finished, tops in tight end rankings, you know, on a weekly basis. I'm still sitting here saying I don't trust myself enough to figure out which tight end to start after you get past those top 5 or 6 guys. So that should tell you all you need to know. It's just very, you know, it's not always going to be about matchup. It's just really tough to kind of find that high level production. So I do think you want to trend toward the higher end guys. But if you miss out on that top 6 and I don't think you should reach in that second tier. Like, I think you should wait for the values, because there's those guys are risky too. And if you look at historical win rates, you start to see that after the first four rounds, people taking their first tight end in rounds 5, 6, 7, usually not a plus EV move. So there's a lot of landmines there too. And even if those guys hit, they probably still aren't going to outscore the, you know, the top three guys on a weekly basis anyway. So I wouldn't reach if guys fall to me for the last guy in the tier. I'm getting that. But if not, I'm usually just waiting to I'm treating it essentially like late round quarterback and just going after a value guy that I like after the other 10, 11, 12, whatever teams have taken their tight end. I'm just going to go for that and try to make it up that way, because I don't see a point in reaching in that, you know, in that 7 through 12 tier. I think they're all so close, and they're going to be volatile on a weekly basis during the season anyway.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, that's exactly how I'm approaching things, like right down to the exact tiers and all that sort of stuff. And I think what you said at the end is maybe the most important part, is if you don't end up getting one of those elite guys, and if you miss out on that top 5 or 6 tier, those guys, do not pay up. Don't pay up. That is going to be a mistake. You can grab one or even two guys from that next sort of big group and wait very, very late to get them. And I think that's the move. And they're not going to get you. It's very hard to find a Darren Waller or a Logan Thomas that can kind of come out of nowhere and put up top 5 numbers. It's going to be very tough to crack the top 5 with the guys that are up at the top and the kind of volume that they get. But you can definitely find somebody in that group that could get into the top 10 and give you a sort of steady production. Not the upside that those other guys have, but you know, could still give you pretty steady production and be your starter for the whole year. So when we're looking at the guys in that range, I mean, that's probably where we're going to look. It's not going to be amongst the elite guys, but we're trying to figure out who can get up near the top. And that kind of leads us to my next question, which is looking at the breakouts. And this is probably everybody's favorite question in these episodes, because everybody wants to know, who's the breakout going to be at each position? Tell me who I'm going to draft, and they're going to blow up and help me win weeks and get bragging rights in my league. So who's the tight end, do you think, that fits that description this year? Who's going to be the big breakout guy?
I'll name a couple, because I think breakout is kind of a relative term. I think the one guy I see that's not a stud that could enter that tier is TJ Hockenson. And the reason being is because there's a few factors kind of working in his favor. Number one, he is on a Lions team that is expected to be one of the league's worst, has one of the lowest win totals. That should give them a lot of passing game scripts. You have Jared Goff, who is, you know, all the reports out of camp have been he's not really throwing the ball downfield. That's kind of what we know about him as a quarterback anyway. The wide receiver depth is pretty much lacking. So you could see them, like Hockenson, being that true number one target. And remember, that's how George Kittle had that monster season a couple years ago. It was before San Francisco was really good yet. And, you know, they were still kind of, you know, throwing a lot, and they didn't have much at wide receiver, and you saw Kittle go nuts. Now, I'm not saying Hockenson is on that same talent level, but he does have high draft pedigree. He is one of the more talented guys. So I think he could, if there's anyone in that, you know, outside the top three that could really break out and perhaps enter that top three if a guy gets injured or something, is Hockenson. And then if you go further down, and, you know, a guy that I think could make a jump this year is Irv Smith for the Vikings.
Okay, I got to stop you, because it's like you're just reading right out of my notes here. Like, literally, the way you described how you're approaching the position, the way you talked about Hockenson, I had looked at him and thought about him as the next Kittle. Now you're going at Irv Smith. We are completely lockstep so far, which probably doesn't make for a great podcast, but I love just ISO ball here. I'm just letting you go. This is fantastic.
Yeah, man, we'll have to find something to disagree about, because that's what the people want. You know, they, you know, try to hear both sides of the coin. So we'll kind of figure out something out. But yeah, Irv Smith, for everyone who doesn't know him, you know, drafted highly a couple years ago, but was kind of blocked by the fact that Kyle Rudolph was the veteran, the more trusted guy in that offense, and they weren't really ever a pass heavy offense. So the fact that Rudolph is now gone, you're gonna see Smith, I think, get his routes and, you know, percentage of routes run into the 70s or even 80s. You know, he was there, you know, some of the games Rudolph missed last year. So I think being that number one tight end, and he's a receiving guy, they're not gonna make him block too much. You know, they're going to use Conklin or whoever is the number two guy for that. I think that really gives Smith some upside, especially if, you know, just think variance kind of breaks his way with maybe Thielen gets hurt and misses a couple games, maybe Jefferson misses a couple games, or maybe they just pass a little more. You know, they really haven't been a pass-heavy team, so there's room to grow in a lot of different areas. And you usually see these tight ends, these young tight ends break out in year three, like their true breakouts come in year three, if not year two. So Smith is kind of on track for that, and he's a guy you can usually draft outside the top 12.
All right, well, I want to talk about those guys in a second. I'll chime in on them. But I also want to say that we probably should mention Kyle Pitts here. You know, normally I wouldn't say that a rookie could be a breakout guy. Normally, definitely at tight end, you would almost never say that. But I do think that Pitts has a shot. I would almost put him with Hockenson in that range for me anyway. Looking at a guy that could get that kind of volume, he's stepping into this ideal situation where you have, you know, Julio leaving and you have him coming in and kind of being that tight end, wide receiver, hybrid guy. I've talked about him plenty on other episodes, so we don't need to get into it too much, but kind of the exception to the rule at tight end and a guy who does have a chance to maybe put up that top five season right off the bat.
Here's with something. Deion Hockenson.
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Let's talk about this because I think we might have a little disagreement here, and because I'm kind of torn almost because I love the guy is so talented.
It's risky. Don't get me wrong. It is very risky.
I think, but I look at him and, you know, I try to obviously weigh the floor and the ceiling, not just the median projection, but the reason I see a lot of risk factors for him based on his ADP, which is a lot of times he's going before Hockenson. He's kind of already, you know, cemented into that second tier, and it may be a little premature. Historically, we really don't see tight ends put up top five seasons in their rookie year. I mean, he would essentially, to pay off his cost, pretty much have to have the best tight end, rookie tight end season of all time, which I think is a little bit of a stretch. And then you look at, for example, the, you know, another risk factor I think is when you have another tight end on a roster that could not take snaps, but, you know, kind of be on the field at the same time. And you have Hayden Hurst, the guy who played a ton of snaps last year. Now, I do think they're going to go a lot more two tight end sets and things like that. But, you know, they could kind of use Pitts, you know, kind of break him in a little bit slower than, you know, kind of in line with most rookies. And so I look at a guy like George Kittle, for example, because that Niner team, they needed receivers and they needed guys to step up. And that rookie year, you know, he was pretty good, but he had about, you know, 500 some yards. And that was a pretty good rookie year for him. So I just think, like, I'm trying to get Pitts some spots where he falls to me, but I do think we're overvaluing him just a bit. Also, we don't know exactly how this Falcons offense is going to look. You know, Arthur Smith was a guy in Tennessee, ran the ball a ton. Now, the Falcons don't have that same, type of running game to where I think he'll do that quite as much, but they're just all these kind of risk factors that I, especially along with the uncertainty that I think I'm more inclined to not reach on him, which I feel like I have to do more. And if people are going to give me Hockenson instead of Pitts, then I'm going to take that every time because I actually have him ranked above. So I don't hate Pitts, but I do think he's a little bit overvalued based on his ADP.
Yeah, and you're probably right. I mean, I don't blame anyone for shying away from him. I will say that in my bold predictions column, you mentioned him having the best tight end season ever. One of my bold predictions was that he would beat Ditka's record for yards by rookie tight end, but it's a bold prediction. It's not something that I think for sure is going to happen. But I think one of the areas that we got to look at this is just really, how are we defining him? Because is he a tight end or not? Because the way that what we're hearing out of camp and everything is that they're lining him up everywhere. I think he's going to be used plenty outside. And I think they view him as a guy who can come in and not play Julio's role, not take over like that, but be that athletic, big body guy for them, even on the outside at times, because they don't have anybody else to do that. They have Calvin Ridley, who is going to be great, who was great when Julio was out before. He's going to be their number one. So that's why I'm not going out looking at Pitts being a guy that, you know, could potentially just totally dominate. But I think he's going to be able to come in because we've seen rookie tight ends do okay when they've gotten the opportunity before, right? Evan Ingram that year, there was a bunch of other injuries and he kind of got thrust into that role. And maybe Evan Ingram is a better comp. Like, I know George Kittle's awesome, but I feel like maybe Ingram is a better comp as that kind of more receiving athletic tight end. Kittle is just all around amazing, and I can't wait to see him back out in the field this year, and I think he's going to remind everybody why he's maybe the best tight end overall in the league. But that's one of the reasons why I think, and I get that it is a projection, and I get that we're taking a shot, and it is incredibly risky when you look at some of the other players that are going in the range that Pitts is going, but it's one that I'm willing to take. It's one that, based on his draft capital, based on, you know, the team taking him where they took him, there's no way that they can just ease him into this role. And I think what we're hearing in camp so far is that they're using him a ton, and I kind of expect that to be the case. Now, whether he's up for it in year one, whether he can totally just step into the pros and do it, that maybe is the case where he won't be able to, and it'll take him a little bit of time, and there'll be some growing pains. But for me, that one-to-one comparison with all the other tight ends before him, I just don't know that I totally view him as a tight end, and that's part of the reason why. I know when he was coming out, a lot of people were looking at him saying if he just came out as a receiver, he would be one of the best receivers in this draft class. So I think he's coming into the league as a guy who can really do damage on the outside as well and isn't just a tight end. And yeah, it's definitely risky. I'm not going into this blind and saying that, you know, he's going to come out and for sure break all these records. I'm just saying I see that potential. And we know sometimes this happens. And not to completely compare it to like Justin Jefferson last year, but nobody saw Justin Jefferson coming out and putting up a 1,400-yard season. And it happens sometimes, right? You get these exceptions to the rule where these guys come out and have these crazy rookie years. There's a potential that Pitts could be that guy based on everything we know about him.
Yeah, oh, there's absolutely, and I think you do have to kind of target upside, especially once you're getting to that spot. But the one thing I always think about, if you view him as a straight up receiver, I think that changes it a little bit. But essentially, you know, it's the same reason why I think, you know, taking a tight end in the first round is still risky, even if that tight end has a very high floor, high ceiling combo. It's because wide receivers, the top wide receivers are going to outscore tight ends. You know, running backs are going to outscore tight ends. So you're also, when you're taking Pitts, like, you better be sure, because you're passing on a lot of like quality, you know, wide receiver two, wide receiver three types that, you know, just based on position, if you consider Pitts as a tight end at all, would have more upside. But I do get it. If you're viewing him more as a flat out receiver that's going to play on the outside a lot, I think that changes it a little bit. But yeah, that's just kind of my thinking there.
Yeah, people are either going to be really, really happy or really, really disappointed with Pitts. But I'm excited to see how that one works out. And then just touching on those other guys you mentioned, I mean, Hockenson, it kind of speaks for itself. The de facto number one receiver in that offense. And out of camp there, that's all we're hearing about him, right? He's getting all the passing work. No offense to that receiving core, but there's nobody that really profiles as a true number one, a guy that's going to get a ton of volume. So Hockenson's looking great there. And
offense.
Then Irv Smith.
Offense to that receiving core. All of the offense to that receiving core. We're not paid to be nice to these guys. We're not like on NFL Network just, you know, trying to prop, like, we're definitely going to offend this Lion receiving core. I mean, outside of St. Brown, who I think will be the most open receiver, you know, of any of the guys they put out there. I mean, they really have nothing, and I don't think that Williams or Perriman is a mesh for Goff. And in camp, you're hearing the main standout besides St. Brown has been Khalif Raymond. So that tells you all you need to know. They need some more speed, and I don't know if those big guys, you know, those big kind of outside deep ball threats are going to really work out. So yeah, it's we're offending the Detroit Lions receivers.
Well, maybe it's the Canadian in me. I'm just too nice, right? I don't want to be negative about any of these guys. But we saw, I mean, you talked about Irv Smith there too. We saw that people kind of started shying away from him a little bit when Mike Zimmer had that quote that his role wasn't going to grow and it was going to go to Tyler Conklin instead. But I don't think that really changed anything. Last season, we saw what it could look like when Rudolph was out. He was out for the final four games. He had Smith and Conklin playing together, and during that stretch, they both put up some numbers, but Irv Smith had the eighth most fantasy points among tight ends. He was at 12.8 per game, had three touchdowns in those four games. So I just don't want anybody to forget that this is a second-round pick, and as much as we talked about Kyle Pitts and kind of the unicorn that he could be, normally these tight ends take a couple years, right? And he's only 23 years old. He came in so young. So with Jefferson a little banged up and Thielen getting up there in age and Thielen dealing with some soft tissue injuries in recent years and at his age, that could be a little concerning for potential drop-off coming there. And then Smith, another guy, and I don't want to keep focusing on this too much, but when we're looking at these breakout candidates, you want to hear those positive drumbeats. You want to hear the good buzz about them in camp. And that's what we're hearing. We're seeing Smith get used on tight end screens, getting used all over in the red zone. And you talked about their offense, and as far as passing volume goes, it went up, and it's not near the top of the league by any means, but 466 attempts in 2019, 516 in 2020, maybe makes things a little more rosy for some of the receiving options there. So I'm being clear that I don't think Smith, unlike, you know, Pitts and Hockenson, I think do have a chance to get that amazing volume and maybe get up into the top three. Probably still unlikely, but at least have a chance. Smith isn't a guy that I think is going to flirt with that unless he put up some insane touchdown number. But I do think he, out of those other guys that we're looking at kind of outside the top five or six, I think he's got as good a shot as anyone to be, you know, the tight end seven or so and be a regular in the tight end one finishes every week. So as much as breakouts are important, though, we probably should keep moving on. You talked about being negative. I'm going to give you a chance here. We got to talk about the busts, right? The guys who could be those wasted draft picks, because that's also pretty key to this whole process, right? We don't want to, and I hope that Kyle Pitts wasn't your guy because we just went over it, but is there somebody that you want to put that warning sign over before they enter the drafts?
I think that there's a list of guys, again, for me, because you look at the difference, I think, between like a tight end 7 and a tight end 14, and I just don't think it's that great. And so, therefore, the kind of the red flags get amplified for guys that are going highly, not because of their talent necessarily or anything like that, just because of their risk factors and because of the opportunity cost there. Again, you know, you don't want to get caught up taking a, you know, the TE 7 or 8 or 9 and bypassing like a quality wide receiver when, you know, wide receivers at this point, you're just looking to shore up your bench with raw points and upside and things like that. And you could get a similar guy a little later. So I think that based on ADP, Dallas Goedert is a guy who worries me a little. I mean, until we know what's going to happen with the Eagles and Zach Ertz, I think, you know, 8 is a little rich for me. And even if Ertz gets moved and Goddard is a starting tight end, I mean, there's still no guarantees that this is going to be like a highly profitable tight end offense with Jalen Hurts. It could be a run heavy offense. It could be one of those things where he's, you know, targeting the receivers more. He throws downfield a ton. You know, Goddard was the TE 25, I believe it was when Hurts was starting. So I think there's a low floor there. And then even Noah Fant, as much as I like the talent for him, you know, going off the board as the number 7 tight end on this Bronco team that has shaky, you know, quarterback play, on a team that has a lot of talent at wide receiver, and on a team that has running backs that they can throw to in Williams and Melvin Gordon, I just don't know if Fant is going to has a real kind of path to get the super high target volume that you want. And at the same time, he's also going to be, I think, really unpredictable. He'll have some big games because he's a talented guy, but are you going to be able to start him every week as the number 7 tight end? I don't think so. So those two guys definitely. And then Rob Gronkowski, you know, going as the, you know, 10th off the board. There's a lot of uncertainty here, and there's just a ton of competition for targets.
For sure.
With, you know, Evans, Godwin, Antonio Brown for a full year. Then even at his own position, you have capable guys in O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. And let's not forget that Gronk is still so good that, you know, as a tight end, as a complete tight end, that they were actually using him more as a blocker down the stretch last year and using Cam Brate as more of a receiver. Now, how is that going to play out when you have O.J. Howard in the mix here? There's no guarantee that Gronk's role stays the same all year, especially because this team is in it to repeat as Super Bowl champs. They're going to probably try to, you know, get him some breaks when they can. And if they have to keep him on ice a little bit to preserve him for the stretch run, and maybe this year they use him, you know, more as a receiver in the playoffs, but there's just a lot of uncertainty there. Not to mention, he's always been one of the higher risk injury guys. So, you know, that could obviously rear its ugly head again. He doesn't have that year off the way he did. You know, he played it, you know, all the way through the Super Bowl this year. So I think he's a little higher of an injury risk, and another guy that I don't think is going to be predictable on a weekly basis. So Gronk, Fant, Goddard, I think those guys just aren't going to give you enough consistency to be top 10 picks.
Yeah, I like those. And I think with Gronk, I think that is important to mention because, yeah, he still could be that guy who puts up a decent touchdown total and has some good games fantasy-wise because of it. But there is a strong chance that early in the season, they use some Gronk, then O.J. Howard comes back, and then they give Gronk that, like, late-career Shaquille O'Neal move where it's just, like, take some time off before the playoffs and put him on ice, like you said, right? And, like, let's just make sure you are healthy for that stretch run. That's what would scare me. But that one's just silly, right? Like, he's going on name value purely. Like, he should not be going up in that range at all. There are so many other guys that I would rather have that I think are more exciting than just a guy who is purely pretty much touchdown dependent and with all that target competition like you talked about. A guy who's going even a little later than that now. He was going early in the offseason, and maybe I'm slightly responsible for that ADP dropping quite a bit, but he finished as a top 10 tight end last year. It was Mike Gesicki, and his ADP has fallen, but he's still kind of going in that fringe tight end one range. And the majority of his production last year came when Preston Williams was out. That was after week 9. And they also were missing Devontae Parker for some of those weeks. And prior to Williams going out, Gesicki was averaging the 22nd most fantasy points among tight ends, was just so up and down, only had two really notable performances in the first half of the season. And then after Williams went down, his production skyrocketed. Gesicki was at 13.2 points per game. That was sixth best at the position. And now not only do you have Parker, Williams, they bring in Fuller, they bring in Jalen Waddle, Hunter Long. I know there's a bunch of injuries amongst all those guys and we don't totally know who's going to be healthy for the start of the year, but I'm pretty confident that there's no chance they're going to be as shorthanded as they were in the second half of last season when Gesicki finally started to put up some numbers. So with that increased target competition, another guy that I think is going to be so tough to trust in your lineup, even if Tua takes a step forward, which I do expect him to, I'm still pretty scared off by him, and I just think there's much better options. I'd rather take a look at some of the guys further down the board, and I think there's less risk, right? The further you go down, the less investment you have to make on these guys, and like we've talked about, some of them still have just as much upside as these other guys. So I think there's a couple interesting names that we could call sleepers here. I mean, some of them might not feel like sleepers to us because we've probably been talking about them all offseason, but I always try to remind everybody that, you know, there's a lot of fantasy managers who are just tuning back in around this time of year. Training camps are starting. That excitement for their drafts is building because, you know, most redraft leagues don't draft until these final 3 weeks before the season, right? So is there somebody, let's try to help out those people especially, but is there somebody that people might not be looking at enough? You know, it's very hard, like we said earlier, to find that next Darren Waller kind of coming from way deep and putting up that huge total at the end of the season. But I definitely think there's some guys who could crack that top 10 if things go their way. So who do you have as a sleeper this year?
One guy, and his ADP is starting to climb a little, but I'm still okay with taking a shot on him, is Tyler Higbee. He's one of the few tight ends that we've actually seen that elite level production from. And I just think this Ram team could be undervalued across the board when you consider that their you know, starting running back Cam Akers, who was going to be the centerpiece of that offense, a guy who by the end of the year was getting, you know, 20-25 touches in some games, he goes down. At the same time, they get a quarterback that in Matthew Stafford that Sean McVay is finally comfortable with, a guy that McVay feels suits his system better than Goff. And on top of that, you've also finally gotten rid of Gerald Everett, who would always eat into Higbee's snaps. So, yeah, you have Bryson Hopkins there, and I don't know if he takes over all of the snaps for Everett. I do think that they may become more of a, you know, a three-wide receiver team again, and Higbee would be that guy. And I just think that all of these, you know, we could see a lot of pass attempts for the Rams just because McVay has a quarterback that he's comfy with. So I just think that there's some untapped upside with Higbee. And even if he doesn't have that same type of monster volume that he showed during the end of 2019, he's also a pretty good bet for touchdowns. I mean, you're talking about a team that should be pretty efficient passing the ball. But when you think about Robert Woods, not a major touchdown scorer, Cooper Kupp had one, you know, big year with touchdowns, but not like a major, you know, red zone guy either. DeSean Jackson, he's a guy that, you know, he'll catch some deep, but not another guy that's not really a big red zone guy at all, really. So Higbee could lead the Rams in touchdowns, receptions, even if he's not like a monster volume guy. So I think there's some interesting upside with Higbee. And then, you know, going down the list, I think that I really like a lot of the guys because I think you can get a lot of guys that have the same type of upside with pretty much no lower of a floor than the guys going, you know, in that 7 to 10 range. So I think, you know, Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, I think they'll be the centerpieces of the Patriots offense. If the Patriots tight end offense is like the same as it was with, you know, Aaron Hernandez and Gronk, they both could run, you know, routes on, you know, 70%, 75% of dropbacks if the Patriots kind of switch that offense up. And that makes, you know, that makes them valuable just based on routes run. And so I think you have to look at them. I think Jared Cook is an interesting sleeper just because, you know, he's replacing that Hunter Henry role. It could be a high volume offense there. And they may have that one receiver that just kind of runs deep routes and, you know, doesn't really draw much attention. So, you know, with Guyton and all those guys. So I think that Cook is interesting. And then I think even, you know, a guy like Evan Engram, like if you're going to take a absolute flyer, I think Engram, you know, had like a nightmarish season last year. But I think with less attention on him now, I think that you could actually see him, you know, if a couple of things break right, he could be right back in that, you know, borderline top 12 range. So I like a lot of these guys. And even, you know, Zach Ertz is having a good camp, right? So he had a down season last year, but he's reportedly still healthy. And like, if he gets traded, he'll probably go to a place where he'll be the number one tight end. So I wouldn't sleep on Zach Ertz. But even if he's on the Eagles, I would say that if he starts the season on the Eagles, he's still going to be their number one tight end. Like, he's still going to play over Goddard. So, I mean, if I'm choosing between Goddard, you know, in the top 10 or Ertz, you know, in 15th, 20th, whatever, I'm going Ertz every time. So a lot of those guys, I think, are the guys that you take the chances on because, let's be honest, it's a crapshoot. So take some value and take some guys that we've seen this elite level of production from before that, you know, people were just down on them because they're coming off bad seasons.
The Ertz thing, I laughed because we did a mock draft this week at the Score. I got a bunch of staff members involved. And in the second to last round, we only did 12 rounds. So it was like the 11th round and someone took Ertz. And they took him as like the, like this isn't tight end premier or anything. It was just like a half PPR league. And they took him as like the tight end 10 or something like that. And I messaged him. I was like, was that a serious pick? Like, are you joking? Or like, you're really going to take Ertz that high? And he was like, yeah, I think, and kind of said some of the things you said. And I was like, we should probably change that. Like, there's no draft where he's going in the 11th round as the tight end 10. And so I made him change it. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe that was terrible, man, of me. But I didn't think that he belonged anywhere up there.
If Ertz has a, like, because remember, you know, we started the show kind of talking about the fact that stud tight ends are valuable because there's a huge drop off and most of the tight ends that are going later, like after the top three, we really can't see them posting elite level production. Well, Zach Ertz, we've seen it from him. He has one, you know, we have one down year where he gets injured. And let's not forget that, you know, we look at Ertz and we kind of said, okay, he's getting a little older. He's getting a little hurt. He must be washed, you know. But in reality, the dude that was broken was Carson Wentz. Like, Carson Wentz ruined pretty much everyone on the Eagles season last year, from the coaching staff, whose, you know, lack of, you know, their schemes kind of took the forefront because receivers couldn't beat coverage. And so, you know, you had to kind of switch things around to you know, the receivers themselves, to Ertz. I mean, no one really had a good year on the Eagles last year, and it was because of Carson Wentz. So if Ertz, like I said, Ertz could, he'll be the starting tight end on the Eagles if he stays. But if he gets traded, he's probably going to be the tight end one somewhere. And I mean, who knows? Like, I don't think he's done, especially after hearing that he's had a pretty good camp. So like, it's just how soon we forget, right? Like, Zach Ertz was the consensus, like, you know, in that stud tier just a year ago, one bad year, and now he's just completely out of the picture. I'll bet on that rather than trying to reach on like a Noah Fant in the middle rounds every time.
Well, if Ian at the Score is listening, he is going to be able to hold that one over me for a long time if Ertz ends up being good this year. But I'll throw one more name out there too, Adam Trautman. I mean, he was a 2020 third rounder, really explosive athlete, 95th percentile agility score, 82nd percentile catch radius. And last year we got some glimpses of that. Two of his 15 catches went for 41 yards, and he also had one for 29 yards. And we don't really know what that Saints offense is going to look like in the post-Drew Brees era, but I can tell you that they've thrown 21 total touchdowns to their tight ends over the last two seasons. So that seems to be a staple of their offense, no matter who's playing quarterback. And then like we talked about with some other guys like Hockenson and stuff, you have a receiving core that I know Marcus Callaway is getting some hype, but you're going to have Michael Thomas out for maybe half the season. Who knows what's going to happen there? So they don't really have that locked in number one receiver aside from Alvin Kamara. I mean, Alvin Kamara is essentially going to be the number one receiver, but Troutman could see a decent amount of volume, could have a really good touchdown potential. And last year, Jared Cook, somebody you mentioned, I mean, he was the Saints starter and he recorded the 10th most fantasy points at the position. And I think Jared Cook is definitely on the backside of his career, and it was mostly due to touchdown production. But Troutman's coming in as a younger, more athletic guy. He could potentially do some things in that offense. And you could also make a case. I mean, it depends how far we want to go down here. Guys like Gerald Everett, who followed Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, he followed him to Seattle. So now he's going to get a chance to be the starter. And maybe we'll have Higby and Everett finally split up, and both of them could be pretty solid fantasy options. A lot of scoring opportunities probably in that Seattle offense as well. Seems like they're going to up the tempo. Even a guy like Cole Kmet, like, I think now we're getting into maybe more deep sleepers here. But I think he has the skills to be a fantasy starter. It's just a matter of getting that torch passed. And Kmet, he took over for Jimmy Graham in terms of playing time late last year. Second half of the season, Graham's snaps dipped to below 50%. Kmet was up in the 80, 90% range. The only problem was that even with less snaps, Jimmy Graham was still that thorn in scoring position, right? He was still out-targeting him in the red zone. So we don't want to see that, but those are, I think, some deeper guys. I mean, I don't know if you want to comment on them or if you have another, like, you know, one of those really, really kind of super deep guys that you want to mention.
Yeah, so I'll comment on these guys first. I think Troutman, I like the way people are thinking about it. I think it's a sharp name to know, but I think he's still a year away, honestly, because you just look at the Saints offense, and what I think will happen is if Michael Thomas, you know, he's obviously going to miss some time. I just think it'll be a pretty run-heavy offense. With Drew Brees, yeah, you can throw the ball a lot, and you're going to be super efficient, and he's throwing mostly underneath, and so the volume is there, and the receptions are there, and I think Troutman caught 15 out of 16 balls last year, so you know that kind of is a product of Brees in that offense, but I just don't know that he's going to get, like, the consistent volume, the consistent, you know, even the consistent snaps to be fantasy relevant this year. I think he might have a game or two, but I think it's going to be really tough to predict. I think he's going to be more of a year three breakout, than a year two. Everett
might be able to say the same about Kmet, right?
Like, yeah,
might
I think
you're away
Kmet,
as well.
We might need
Jimmy Graham completely out of the picture next year.
Right. Like, I think Kmet is a little further along than Troutman just because he did play so much down the stretch last year. And, but I just, you start having to look at, like, okay, it's the amount of routes run kind of jumbles together for most of the tight ends, you know, that we're talking about now. So now you're looking at the offenses, and you just, when you look at Chicago, you don't really see a tight end, the opportunity for a tight end to really be consistent. I mean, I think Allen Robinson and then Darnell Mooney are going to command the most targets. And then I think, you know, whether it's Damian Williams or Montgomery or a mix of the two. And then if Cohen comes back, like, the running back will be in that mix. So especially with, you know, the team using, you know, two tight end sets and things like that, I just don't see the consistency, but I think he's a year away. Everett, I'm not really excited about because I don't know that he's going to get enough routes. Like, I know he's going to be, you know, they signed him, but he may not even be the true starter in the sense that, like, you still have Will Dissly there, who was very productive and, you know, kind of split time with Olsen down, like, at most points last season. So, yeah, I think it'll be a true platoon. And then you also have Parkinson there, and he's entering year two there. They like him. So, I mean, I don't know if he kind of eclipses the 50% routes per dropback mark. on a consistent basis. And so, yeah, I think Everett's not like he's not a guy I'm excited about. I think all these guys are kind of similar in the fact that they all will probably have like a couple of big games. And if you're in best ball and they're your tight end too, you're not going to hate yourself. But as far as redrafts, yeah, I'd rather buy low on like some of the, you know, some of those other guys. Then once you get into this tier with, you know, outside the top 20, it's really a crapshoot with these guys. It's so tough to predict. And believe me, like I've tried it and there's just nothing that's going to kind of give away one guy versus another in that range.
Well, the most of the guys that we just mentioned are probably going to go undrafted in redraft leagues, right? They're going to be more waiver wire pickups than anything, so you don't even have to really worry about them too much in your draft. But that brings us to the final segment I want to do here. We've been doing it on all these preview shows. I think it's been great. Just rapid fire style. We're just going to go here. Quick answers only. If you have to give some brief context, you can, and I love how thorough you've been the whole show. I feel like we've talked about almost every tight end. It's been awesome. But this one, we're just going to rattle through them. So maybe one, two sentences, but something quick for each question. Sound good?
Yep.
All right, let's do it. We've already referenced them a ton, talked about those top three guys. We have Darren Waller with this ankle injury. He's got 4 weeks to get healthy. The team doesn't seem that concerned, but he has missed now almost 2 weeks of practice, I think. So might be a reason for some worries. George Kittle, we've mentioned the target competition in San Francisco now. A little different than it was a couple years ago for him. But with that in mind, when we're looking at Kelce and Waller and Kittle, are you worried about any of those guys falling out and are disappointing amongst those top three?
No. The median games missed for a tight end is usually going to be one. So I don't think that it's a major concern unless you see Waller enter the year with a true ankle injury. I think if those guys play a normal complement of games, they're way ahead of the field.
If you had to pick one that you think was going to disappoint, who would it be, though? Forcing it on you here now.
I'll go Travis Kelce just because, again, it's just all about the draft capital. Last year, Kelce's ADP was, you know, at the end of the first round, early second. You could pair him with Adams and some of those other guys. This year, it's going to be a lot harder to, especially in some of the sharper drafts. He's going in, you know, mid to the early part of the first round. So I think he could disappoint just based on ADP. It's like you're taking him at his ceiling and, you know, any tight end ceiling. So I'll go Kelce.
All right, based on what we talked about in today's show, I think the answer to this one's going to be Hockenson. Is he the guy who, if anybody could join that elite tier, he's the one that you'd put your bet on?
Yeah, TJ Hockenson by far would be, you know, that guy that could join the elite tier because, again, he could be the true number one receiver for the Lions. They may have to pass a lot because they're behind. Jared Goff is likely to favor the tight end. And Hockenson's a talented, you know, guy with a lot of draft pedigree entering year three.
All right, this one's probably highly unlikely, but if there were one that was going to be fantasy relevant, which rookie tight end not named Kyle Pitts would have the best chance to be fantasy relevant this year?
That's really tough. I would probably say, what's the guy in Houston's name? It's Brevin Jordan, I believe it is.
Brevin Jordan, yeah.
Yeah, I would say Brevin Jordan. The reason being that we know almost nothing about this Texans offense. They got a new head coach. There's a wide open competition for pretty much every spot in terms of the skill positions except, you know, Brandon Cooks is that top wide receiver. And so we really have no idea, you know, how the snaps and routes and targets are going to shake out in Houston. I don't think it'll be a high volume offense, but if I'm just shooting blind here, I'm going to go with somebody who has that upside of the uncertainty in year one.
All right. You mentioned them already, but I'm forcing you to pick here. Jonnu Smith or Hunter Henry?
I'm going to go Jonnu just because Henry is kind of banged up now. He has had a history of getting hurt, and Jonnu's been having a pretty good camp, so I'll go Jonnu.
Is the Chris Herndon dream dead?
Yes.
Will the Browns finally trade David Njoku this year? And if they do, where would you like to see him go?
I'm going to say they're not going to trade him. I think they, you know, they love, with Stefanski, they love their tight ends, and they have an embarrassment of riches at the position, but it comes in handy. I mean, remember last year when the Browns literally had no receivers for one of their games? Like, it's never, you know, for a guy like Stefanski, I don't think it's ever a bad thing to have a bunch of tight ends. And I believe Njoku's listed ahead of Bryant on the latest depth chart. It's unofficial, but I actually think they're pretty high in him. If I had to choose a place for him to go, I would probably say Indianapolis, because I think, you know, they were kind of using those three tight ends last year. I think Doyle's on the downside of his career. You know, Cox is okay, but he's never really taken that step. So I think it would be an interesting pairing with a guy like Carson Wentz, who's relied on his tight ends a lot in the past.
All right, and last one, and this is by far the deepest we've gone today, but do you think there will be a tight end from either the Cardinals, the Bengals, the Panthers, or the Jaguars that actually matters for fantasy this season?
Cardinals, Bengals, Panthers, Jaguars. I mean, I would say if it was any of them, it would probably be the Panthers, because my guy Dan Arnold is there. But I don't expect it to happen for any of these teams. I think what you have to look at is the routes, like, you know, the snaps, the routes for the position as a whole. And like, the Cardinals are predominantly a four wide receiver team, and I think they'll go back to even more of that now that, you know, they added AJ Green, they drafted more, you know, they have guys, you know, they have four legit guys that they could go with that, those four wide receiver sets. And at the same time, they let go of Arnold and they didn't really re-up at the position. So I think we're gonna see not much usage from the tight end for the Cards. You know, Bengals, they're another team that will go, they'll go three wide, but then they also have, they'll go four or five wide at times, but they also have Joe Mixon that they want to get the ball to. So the tight end is really just set up to block in that offense more often than not. So I don't think you see an explosion there. And then the Jaguars, I mean, they just don't have anybody. So, I mean, it's an interesting, you know, maybe like landing spot for a Njoku or Ertz or something like that. And there is some uncertainty there, but I still think they have enough guys to scheme the ball to when you consider their receivers and then ETN, and then you still have James Robinson. So there's just not a lot of opportunity there, which is why, you know, we had two guys we haven't really talked about this whole pod. I guess they didn't fit into any of the buckets, but I actually am fine with Logan Thomas as one of those tight ends. Like, the out of all those tight ends kind of going in that next tier before it really drops off, because this is a guy who ran 90%+ of the routes. And when you look at the tight end depth chart for the Washington football team, there's really no one behind him. He could run 90% of the routes again. And that's just, that volume is pretty much unheard of. So if Logan Thomas has the same role as he did last year, he's going to be one of the more consistent tight ends, just straight up based on volume. And he was actually a pretty good player last year, so I like him. And then another interesting guy is Anthony Firkser. Like, instead of looking at, like, you know, all these other teams that and trying to, you know, pull someone out of a hat, Firkser is a guy last year, he blocked on 1% of his pass snaps. So he ran a route the other 99% of the time. For his career, he runs a route on 97% of his pass snaps. So he's, like, listed as a tight end, but he could be used more as a receiver. And if he's the starter and is, you know, on the field for, you know, let's say even 70% of the snaps, he'll run a route on a lot of those, and they'll probably use the back to block more. So it's kind of interesting with him. I think he's a guy that you got to look out for as well, because it's all about those routes at tight end. That's what's going to give you more predictability than anything else.
Well, I got to say, hats off to you, because all these preview episodes that we've done, we've officially made the tight end episode the longest, and I thought tight end would by far be the shortest, but that just speaks to how thorough you are, how great you are at your job, man. I mean, this episode was awesome, so it's absolutely no surprise there. Make sure you're following Chris on Twitter, at Chris Raybon, checking out all his content at the Action Network, and listening to the Fantasy Flex podcast, especially that episode I'm going to be on in the next couple weeks. So I'm glad we could finally do this, man. I mean, just absolutely well worth the wait, and appreciate you taking the time, dude.
It was a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Anything else you want to point out and direct people towards that you're working on before we sign off?
Yeah, go check out actionnetwork.com. We have our fantasy draft kit up. You can see Kerner and my projections and kind of customize it to your week settings and all that good stuff. And yeah, the Fantasy Flex is on a new feed. So if you haven't subscribed to that feed, please do. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcast. So yeah, that's it. And let's get this money.
Awesome. I will be back next week. We're going to continue to get you ready for the season. The Score Fantasy Football Draft Kit is always getting updated. Download the Score app if you don't have it already. If you're listening, I'm sure you do. I'll have a rankings update in there later today. Offensive line rankings are coming early next week. So are my strategy articles, depending where you're picking in the order. So lots more on the way here. Until next week, though, big thanks again to Chris. Just an awesome guest. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening. And we will see you next time.
Said leave on time. My baby said, leave on time. Leave on time with me.